I was a Jo Malone, whatever she meant by that. It was relatively easy to put fragrances together, and Jo Malone had put together some lovely scents in some elegant and simple packaging. But my rituals were made up of many components. Sure, my packaging needed to improve, but I had managed everything on a very tight budget. Rachel Elnar knew nothing about me. How dare she suggest I was a nobody? I bit my lip. "I'm sorry, but could you tell me who you are, please?" I replied, genuinely curious about this impolite person sat in front of me and how she'd made her supposed fortune. She told me briefly about Red Letter Days. Oh, so she had taken other people's businesses, like spa breaks and racing supercars, and was selling them on a credit card to redeem in exchange for an experience. I knew how that worked. Her business relied on people buying the day out and then failing to use the voucher. So her big idea was to act as a middleman and pick up cash from failed transactions. I must have looked unimpressed, which I was. And rightly so, as it turned out. The tension in the den escalated. I didn't want their money. They were so arrogant and clearly had no intention of putting any effort into my venture. What was also evident was what they knew about toiletries you could tattoo on an ant's behind. Telling this bunch of muppets that removing parabens, fake estrogens and other toxic chemicals was the future of this market fell on deaf ears. Since 2003, the rate of estrogen-driven cancers has escalated beyond anyone's predictions. Ovarian, breast and non-small cell lung cancer are all estrogen-driven. Rates of non-small cell lung cancer, NSCLC, have escalated from 12% to 40% of total cancer diagnoses in the last 15 years, and this is likely a result of the increasing presence of plastics and estrogen mimickers in our environment. These diseases affect mostly young women in their 30s and 40s. Most people are unaware that NSCLC is driven by estrogen, not by cigarettes. Parabens in cosmetics and toiletries make up some of this estrogen load, and microwaving food in plastic containers, which has become the norm for many busy families, is a practice that fills me with horror. Several months passed between filming the program and it being aired. In the end, my appearance ended up as a 5-minute section on TV. They cut it down to even less on the DVD. Edited down from 2.5 hours in the den. Yes, 2.5 hours of grilling on all sides. Ouch. Of course, the BBC only showed a one-sided version of events. By the end of the session in the den, they had nearly managed to push me to tears, more by sheer frustration than their belligerent approach. Their final reasons for rejecting me were that I was obsessed with it. But wait, isn't obsessiveness a good thing in business? And they questioned my business acumen. Really? I came out of the experience shaking with fury that I'd been so badly abused by the BBC. But I came off lightly compared to many others. 2.5 hours of filming can give the editor a lot of material to work with. I was completely at his or her mercy. This was the first series. The mighty dragons had to look invincible and participants meek. It made for more interesting viewing. As my friend said after I got home, it really didn't matter what I had said in the den. The important thing was that I'd looked fabulous. Reality TV was all about looking good. She assured me I had nothing to worry about. I wasn't sure that was true, but it did make me laugh. As a strategy to get well, I may have got things just a teeny bit wrong. I wanted to do as much as I could in as short a time frame as possible, to cram it all in. In the back of my mind, I was convinced I was going to die. The enormous stress of my health issues, financial hardship, business woes, and, to top it all, the emotional and psychological battering in the den really should have finished me off. Anyone feeling that cancer is just too much to fight and seemingly impossible to beat should take heart. Despite all this frenetic activity, I survived. Taking on so much was crazy, but at the time, I just couldn't see it. It demonstrates just how good my cocktail must have been. And it demonstrates that despite tension, stress, and pressure, you can still get well in the direst of circumstances, and how resilient the human body can be. There is always hope. When I learnt that Rachel Elnar's business had gone bust only a few months after the show had aired, and that she had been bought out for a pound by two of her fellow dragons, I am ashamed to say I laughed and felt it was some measure of justice. When I look back and add up everything I was doing, from creating the toiletries, the marketing and PR, sourcing products, to selling into stores, bookstores, spa retreats and pharmacies, all of which entailed huge amounts of paperwork, I wonder how I coped at all, especially as the brain-numbing effect of chemo was still taking its toll. And that did not include taking care of my ongoing and time-consuming health issues. What I needed was a business partner to sweep it all up and work on the business beside me, not some smug rich investor who would bring little to the party and only demand yet more from me. It was difficult enough just to stay sane, knowing cancer was still right behind me, snapping at my heels, watching my every move. I had carried on regardless. My dogged, bloody-minded refusal to accept defeat meant I had been oblivious to the damage that stress had caused. But then, I am no Jo Malone, am I? Chapter 14. Danger Returns. Not surprisingly, after all of this, I was burnt out. I had never fully acknowledged just how much cancer had beaten me up. I had carried on as before, refusing to give in, believing I could cope, almost to the point where I was denying I had ever had the disease. I would hide the supplements and drugs I was taking, furtively swallowing them out of sight, trying to convince the world I was fine. If anyone learned about my diagnosis, I wanted them to think I'd made it out the other side unscathed, that cancer had not robbed me of me, that what I'd been through hadn't been the most devastating experience of my life. When I look back now, I'm quite sure I had delayed post-traumatic stress disorder. I had powered on through, taking on more and more, and business had delivered yet another punch. It was a punch too far. I was aware of the link between stress and cancer, and I finally acknowledged that life mattered more. I made the gut-wrenching decision to let my business go. But my company was my baby. All those beloved creations I'd toiled night and day to produce, I would shelve them all. I told myself it would only be until I got myself on a better footing, regained my composure, and felt more like myself. I still had all the formulations, trademarks and copyright on the rituals and CDs, so perhaps relaunching in the future was for the best. With a heavy heart, I informed my buyers that the business was closing. I was fast approaching my 40th birthday, and I needed a break. My markers had remained steady, within normal levels, and it was time to rein back and have a breather. I was still sailing regularly, and my birthday was going to coincide with Cork Week in Ireland, a great gathering of the sailing fraternity, brilliant sailing, and even better après-sail. Time to let my hair down for the crack. I had begun to truly believe that I could conquer cancer. It would not defeat me. But I was still being very careful with my diet. I could not relax completely about that. But I was no longer taking any of the drugs. They had been short-term. Even the aspirin was only taken every now and then, as I worried about the damage the etodolac, NSAID, might have done. I did not fully understand at the time how important it was to keep taking it. Over that summer, I did go off the rails somewhat. I was getting close to my 5-year all-clear date again. And I wanted to celebrate both that and my birthday. In Cork, I found myself in a champagne bar on several occasions. On the eve of my birthday, I was on the champagne bar, diving into many willing hands, fueled by black velvet cocktails, a mix of both Murphy's, a black stout like Guinness, full of iron, a disaster for cancer patients, and champagne. Yep, Jane was letting her hair down. But it was to be a mistake. After I returned home, my right leg swelled up with lymphedema, and a few weeks later, I began coughing and tasting blood. Night sweats returned with a vengeance. Had the leukemia come back too? I panicked. To my horror, my SCC markers had jumped to 200, above the level they were when I was diagnosed with the lung tumour. I didn't need to wait. This was a clear danger signal. I immediately started taking my drug cocktail, the little stash I had in stock from the year before. I began more intravenous vitamin C alongside my cocktail of dipridamol and the statin, and I tentatively took the occasional Etodolac, scared about my stomach and how it might cope. The cancer seemed to have come back hard and fast. I looked back through my research and found the piece from the 1999 Journal of Herbal Medicine. I realized I needed the Mahonia aquifolium with its potent berberine content. This big gun had been forgotten. I hastily added it to my cancer-starving cocktail again. 2 months later, and to my enormous relief, my markers had plummeted back down to below normal again. By the time a CT scan was performed, there was nothing, if there had been anything, to see. Perhaps I had overreacted, or perhaps I had averted another disaster. I would never know. But I realized I could not afford to be reckless like that. Cancer was a long-term problem that would need managing, much like diabetes or HIV. Would cancer eventually completely disappear over time? Or would I always have it, lurking in the background for the rest of my life? Perhaps I needed to take the drugs more regularly. If it meant taking a few daily drugs, then that was hardly a problem. It was perfectly manageable. Whatever had happened, I had got through another blip. It confirmed the power of my cocktail. It demonstrated to me that it had worked against the cervical cancer as well as the leukemia, but perhaps the addition of the berberine had helped boost the synergy further. Perhaps cervical cancer was more driven by glucose and fat than the leukemia. This is indeed the case. Leukemia is more driven by glutamine. My minor transgression had not been fatal. I was back in control. Thank the Lord. This had been a valuable lesson. I would not let myself slip like that again. I decided to continue to take the statin and got another prescription from my oncologist, who agreed it was worth taking longer term. With my business closing, I had a void in my life. I really wanted to focus on trying for a baby. I now felt confident I could beat cancer again if it came my way. I was no longer scared by it. I didn't care if others thought my actions reckless, that I might die and leave the child without a mum. With all the knowledge I had acquired over the past decade, I didn't feel like I was selfish in bringing another person into the world. After lengthy discussions with Andrew, we decided an egg donor and a host surrogate would be emotionally easier for all parties, even if logistically it was far more difficult. We put out the word that we were looking. And to my joy, one of my gorgeous friends offered up her eggs. I was overwhelmed by her generosity. It was such a huge thing for her to do. We had lots of long chats. She was totally happy about it. That she was prepared to endure hormone injections and go through this for us was the most amazing gift.